Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Patterson. I'm back again, yet again, with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And certainly that goes to our guest this week, which we'll get into in just a minute. But before we get there, I just want to remind everybody once again to go check out the website, www.markpattersonnfl.com. And I do have a countdown of when I'm off to Mount Everest, which as we speak today on September 8th, I'm 6 months, 22 days, 22 hours, and some seconds away from actually heading off to Nepal to go attack that big beast, which I'm really jacked up about. Also on the website, you can check out my blog, which I will be getting more and more into as it relates to what's going on real time on the mountain. There'll also be a tracker of me going up and down the mountain as I take that on again next April and May. Again, I always ask the same question. You know, people can go to the podcast tab on the website, www.markpattersonnfl.com, give a ratings and review. It helps elevate the exposure for all these amazing people we have. And finally, there's also a philanthropy tab. I've been working on this now for quite some time, Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. I've teamed up with Higher Ground, great organization here, and we're trying to raise $27,940. We've got a good start right now. I'm excited about that and how we can hopefully help people through cognitive issues, mostly military, and other people like my daughter who have epilepsy. So that's key. Okay, let's jump into it. Today, I've got this all-world James Bond type guy on the pod. He's very inspiring. His name is Josh Phelan. Josh, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, man. Glad to be here with you guys.
Yeah, no. So I think, I forgot to ask you this question before we went live. Are you based in London right now?
No, I'm in Canada, in Alberta, Canada.
Alberta, Canada. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason why I was asking you that I'm broadcasting all the way from Sun Valley, Idaho, little ski town in the middle of nowhere, is because for much of your career, you were in Britain's elite Royal Marine Commando and Special Ops. Pretty impressive. And that's why I would just want to kind of start with that today. But I assume at one point in your life, you're living in England somewhere, right?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Canada, lived all over Canada. 18, I went across and just took a big bite out of adventure and joined the Royal Marines. Main reason for that was the challenge. They have the longest basic training out of any NATO country, 8 months. And the end product, you know, was to close with and kill the enemy in any environment around the world. All that sort of stuff I was just enthralled with. So that's how I ended up over there.
Yeah. So before we get into your incredible story, and it's you know, my hat's off to you as we get into it here in a minute. And that's kind of a little bit of a teaser before we actually go there. You know, your kind of sense for adventure sounded like it started back when you were 16, you're traveling in East Africa and just wanting to climb and all these other things. There's a story that I want to get and ask you more about almost being killed when you're just a young lad growing up, you know, on this great adventure. How did that all come about? Well, I mean, what was that thing that, you know, you felt like your life was in danger?
Yeah, so 16, I went over to Kenya with family friends of ours that were originally from there. I was pretty grateful for that, you know, and my family being so free to let me just kind of roam around. And they let me cut about by myself at times when I was there. So I went into ghettos, slums. I met and befriended local lads who took me around to their families and in the cities and small rural villages, all these crazy, crazy places. Yeah, the place, the story that you're referring to is, I remember, well, there was a few, but kind of really intense moment was when I was on my way out of Kenya, and kind of the touristy thing that we were doing was going to go to Masai Mara Game Reserve, see the elephants, the giraffes and all this. And I remember we pulled out of the city, we had a local driver, and we were just in like the Matatu, the taxi, the old VW sort of van, just bouncing along. And we went down into this wadi, and there was all these goats in the road, and they were belonged to the Maasai, and they were quite shy, these herders, nomadic people, tribesmen. And whenever it was really rare to see them, and they would run away and hide behind their huts or whatever, or the bushes. So we didn't really see any of these guys. But when we pulled down into this wadi, some of the goats, you know, kind of split like the Red Sea, and the driver's honking his horn and all this. And as he was kind of pulling up along the outside of the wadi to get out of it, I saw this guy out of the corner of my eye sprinting across the top and then down into the front of the vehicle, yelling and screaming. And he had his sword out and all of this. And then more men came, and I was sitting in the back of this van, and I was just observing what was going on. They ended up pulling the guy out, dragging him up, picking up stones like they're about to stone him, and screaming. And I remember, I still remember, it's like so clear. So this guy came from the side, and I had both my arms pressed on the windows, and he was reached into his red sash, and he pulled out this dagger, and he was screaming at me. And another guy from behind was yelling and yelling, and he kind of looked at him, and he just smiled at me and stepped back. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And there's this language barrier even between the African people I was with. And this guy picked up this goat that was in the road. And what I could gather even at that time was that we hit this goat or something, and they were obviously really mad about it. This is their livelihood. Oh no, they're going to extort us for money, or they're going to kill this guy or whatever. And then out of nowhere, it just kind of all stopped. And all these guys that were ahead of the vehicle holding these stones, maybe about 20, 30 guys, all started just laughing and dusting off the driver, and he was visibly shaken, you know. And they just threw him back in the vehicle and off we went. And I was like, what the hell has just happened, you know? Eye-opening. And then, you know, went off, saw the elephants, and I still was like, this is mental, you know. But kind of pushed it all away, didn't even think anything of it. But on the way out, I remember pulling down into this wadi again, and some of these guys that were there a few days earlier, just they remembered us, and they were just smiling and waving and laughing. And I was like, this is mind blowing, you know? So that was probably one of the most intense experiences of my life at that time.
Yeah. Well, I've been to Kenya. I've been to Tanzania. I've climbed Kilimanjaro a couple of times, and I've been out in the Serengeti. I've visited the people of the Maasai tribe. And I can tell you for sure that the goats are their currency. They don't literally have money. And so that they trade goats back and forth. And so, you know, I can imagine if you hit one, they'd be furious, and, you know, who knows what they would do. Fortunately, you're still alive and well. But what did that experience do for you? You know, again, where we started at the very beginning about, you know, going off to as part of your adventure of joining Britain's elite Royal Marines and Commandos. You know, was there something at 16 that from that experience at all that like ricocheted years later to like, I want to be in a better position to protect myself and others around me? Was there anything that went through your mind as you kind of look back on it now?
So yeah, that whole time, you know, in Kenya and the freedom that I have, and really seeing the beauty and the brutality of the world, at such a young age. When I got put back into school amongst my peers, you know, I felt very different from them, you know, a lot more mature in a sense that I could hold my own already now through these experiences. And it just seemed extremely boring to me, the world that I had come back to, home in Canada. And I knew that there was so much more out there already, and I experienced a huge bite of it, and I just wanted more. So that kind of thrust me into that adventure.
Yeah,
I started. Go on.
No, I was just going to say it sounded like that might have been the trigger to like activate the sense of adventure, not only on joining the Marines, but also doing, you know, your climbing around the world and your kind of a sense for, you know, stepping out beyond the normal, like you were just describing. I mean, I think it's really inspiring to all people, not just, you know, the things that we're talking about for you here today, but when people go and they go to faraway lands, they come back and there's different stories and realize that people on the other side of the world live completely different than the way that we live. And so it helps like broaden your mind, in my opinion, about, you know, life ahead. Before we get into your accident, I want to ask you a little bit more about being involved in special ops and everything. Your time there, what did that teach you? Because I think it sets up down the road here in a few minutes when we get into this adversity you've had to overcome. What do you think that kind of also helped provide the foundation of toughness, mental grit, overcoming adversity, tenacity, all those things? What did that do for you?
Yeah, it really taught me to face my fear with courage. So recognizing the fear within, yet still moving forward, embracing that adversity, that whatever, especially in that environment and the places that I went and the people I worked with, like it was a tough environment and I had to embrace it, the cold, the wet, the hunger, that fear. Also having cheerfulness in that adversity, you know, that's one of the key things, you know, is always just laugh at whatever is coming down the pipe or, you know, is going to come, you know, dark humor within that environment is a big thing. And that also helps you recognize and be honest with where you're at. You know, it's just a coping mechanism that we used. And then, you know, being able to look back on during my accident, coming out of all of that, and also my climbing, being able to look back at all those experiences, the difficulty, and kind of use them as stepping stones to move forward, to use as like lily pads to jump forward into the next thing. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. So I want to ask you about one, just an experience, maybe you have a story or two. After the special ops, you moved out of that into the private sector. I know a lot of guys do that who are involved in various military branches here in the States. But you were helping out to protect some of the maritime companies and also down in Somalia. I remember, you know, when I read that, I was going back to the Tom Hanks movie, where he's the captain on the ship and they're going through the dangerous water and these guys come out and attack and board their ship and take them hostage and all that stuff. And I'm wondering, like in all that, you know, did you ever have anything remotely close where you were on there and they're coming, you know, you literally had to protect these ships type of thing? Or was it just by the idea of by a show of force, it was the deterrent towards people coming at you?
Yeah, that was our main thing, was to build that deterrent. You know, we did that through running rows and rows of razor wire around the outside, having hoses going. So there was times when we did have skiffs approaching, whether they were there to put in an attack or just probing, where we would get weapons out and kind of have a show of force. And that abruptly got them to spin around and turn around. And we gave the crews, which some of them were very fearful as they've had family members being held in Somalia or had been held in Somalia, a lot of fear. But I do remember once, I can't remember where it was, somewhere in the Gulf. Maybe there was, we're coming out of there into the wider Indian Ocean. And there was a Chinese vessel being attacked at night by multiple skiffs. And they did not have the security on board. And we could hear it all through the communication systems. And they were trying to get a coalition warship to come in close. And the absolute fear and panic going through the radio was, it was pretty intense, even for myself, and trying to keep the crew calm on the bridge at that point was, it was quite difficult, but we were able to do it and just navigate around them, you know, give the navigator direction on what we needed to do. And it was pretty safe, but all in all, that whole period of my life was, it was pretty safe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, which is going,
which is what we wanted. That was our role, you know, to keep it safe, keep it calm, and just get the vessel from A to B or around their circuit. So, you know, it was fun.
So you've got this life of adventure. You're on the edge. You're protecting people. You're a badass. You are involved in the Royal Marine Commando. All this stuff. You love to climb, and now you are on, and I don't know a lot of detail about it, and that's why I want you to help, like, really, you know, dig in on how this all played out. But you end up falling 65 feet and becoming paralyzed from the waist down. And where were you? What happened? How did it play out? And then we'll kind of get into the next chapter of how you've come back.
Yeah, so I ended up coming back to Canada after a few years of doing this security work. I was pretty burnt out, really. I was just, you know, it was 10 years I hadn't been in Canada, and my passion was climbing. I started climbing when I was 16. So on and off for however many years that was, I was climbing, and I always had it in the back of my mind. I was always dreaming of climbing, continuing it, pushing myself, and just learning. So I committed myself to being a dirtbag, you know, so living in the back of my truck, traveling all around summer and winter, just chasing the weather and getting after it as much as I could. So yeah, in 2016, I ended up falling 65 feet. I was in Squamish, British Columbia, on the west coast of Canada. So about an hour north of Vancouver. It's our big granite. It's where big granite mecca for crack climbing is. And yeah, I just went out for a day of climbing. I was rope soloing. So for your audience, it's just managing all the rope work by myself, and using mechanical devices to catch me if I fell. And I don't know what happened. About a month after my injury, I ended up getting an email from someone that saw me fall. So I was just on this band of cliffs. There was a couple other climbers there, and she looked over at me, and I was at the top of the climb. That's how I know it was 65 feet. And I was hooked in to the anchor point, organizing all my ropes and all my gear, managing the system. And she just saw me falling straight down, and I landed on my shoulder, and the back of my head hit a boulder, and I was still conscious, trying to sit up and trying to help. I can't remember. And I ended up getting airlifted to Vancouver, and I was revived twice in the helicopter. And yeah, that was pretty brutal. And that was probably one of the most difficult times of my life. And that first month, I don't really remember much of it, but my mind did revert back to probably the last bit of trauma that I had been through. And that would have been in Afghanistan in 2010. And I thought that I was captured by the enemy and being tortured. You know, I didn't know what was going on around me, but I could hear all these foreign sounds of the hospital, smells, going in and out of surgery, drifting in and out of reality and horror for almost a month, until I was transitioned back to Calgary, Alberta, where my family is. And that's where I started my physiotherapy and my rehabilitation and figuring out what life was going to be like with a spinal injury. And yeah, it's pretty tough. Pretty tough period.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. So basically, what I understood is you're having a great day. Everything was going right the way it normally goes, and because of the shock to the body, you're probably in a coma or something for a month. You don't remember the actual event, and so when you wake up, now there's your family or doctor standing over you and kind of giving you the news. And when that hit, was that like a 1,000-pound ball hitting your head of like, you know, life's over? Or how did you take that on?
So within that first month, I guess I was told that, hey, this is the score, this is the deal. And I have no idea if I lost my mind or, you know, got sad or destroyed or whatever, but it already was kind of in me. So when I started really getting to grips with what was going on and, you know, learning how to go to the bathroom again and all of this, you know, I just switched my focus into, hey, this is what I need to do to move forward. And I think I relied heavily on all my previous experiences, like just that drive and determination was put in place automatically. And I didn't even think about like, oh, my life is over and all this sort of stuff. You know, it was just like, hey, I need to figure out how to sit up in bed. I need to figure out how to transfer into a wheelchair to go to the bathroom and balance on the edge of the bed and all of this sort of stuff. So I just saw it really as, okay, you've got goals. You need to tick them off. It's going to be hard work. And it was, let's get it done. And I was very lucky to have people come and visit me with different levels of spinal injury and be brutally honest with me about, hey, this is what life is going to look like to you. It's going to be hard, but there's also these other things within it that are going to be new and exciting, and you can still do pretty awesome things. So I was quite grateful for that. And go on.
Yeah. So it sounds like one of those things is you have, you know, become this very accomplished racer. So these are one of these sit down bikes that you, I mean, you're pedaling with your arms, and I don't know how far you go, but you know, have you become consumed with that as a life focus of just training, exercising, getting stronger, getting better?
Yeah. So I got introduced to that 3 months from being injured, and I started training with a coach. So I finished my physiotherapy and rehab and go start training indoors and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, that's a ticket that I needed, you know, to start trying to push myself. And yeah, I had a lot of energy still from climbing and all of this in me, and I needed an outlet for it, as well as, yeah, something positive. And it has consumed me. Right now I'm a development athlete, if you want to say that, with Cycling Canada. So I train and race. I also like to do some big endurance stuff. Just the other week I did 150 kilometers through the mountains, trying to do length of the Icefields Parkway from Jasper down to Lake Louise. I had to stop a little bit early, just starting to get a little bit of pain in my elbow due to all the climbing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love going back there because I used to spend a lot of time ice climbing, and it really is like a recharging kind of place for me to get back to.
So what's the message that you have for people? I mean, what you went through was devastating, and I always used to think about it in the back of my mind when I was playing football, and like, if, you know, I took the wrong hit, something awful like that. And I've had a few other people in your circumstance on the pod. What is your core message in terms of when things hit and they're negative and you have to overcome? You're sitting there with this lump of coal on your lap, and you got to figure out how you're going to get through it and get to the other side. What's your core message?
Yeah, I guess it would be, you know, be bold in what you want. Face your fears with courage. Yeah, face that fear with courage. Be unselfish and cheerful in all that you do in getting there.
Why do you think so many people are fearful? Right? Because I think that, I mean, I've said that a lot of times. I've had to personally step into my own fears. And that's in part what's got me climbing these big mountains around the world. But in terms of for yourself, you know, I mean, why do you think that people, it can be big and small, right? I mean, something like you is pretty devastating. So you got to face that fear of how you're going to get through it. And other people are going through relationship issues. Some people are going through job issues. Some people are going through, they just, you know, got bad news from the doctor. They have cancer or something. You know, why is it so hard for people to face those fears, do you think?
I think maybe some of it is they don't know how to be honest with themselves, you know, to maybe ask those questions of, okay, how am I actually doing in this situation? What do I really want out of it? Whatever it may be, how do I want to navigate around it? And I know when I haven't asked myself some of these questions, whether it was in climbing, training now, whatever, that's when I've spiraled into fear, some of this anxiety, this sort of stuff. I don't know if that kind of answers that.
Yeah, no, it does. And it's a great answer. And that's your answer. I think part of my answer, and you've gone through this for sure, and you continue to go through this, is because it's hard, you know, and you don't know what's on the other side. I mean, when you're going to face your fears, that means you have to put in the hard work to go achieve something that is, you know, depending on what your circumstance is, it's going to take a lot of work, and you got to put your head down and, you know, just keep making your way up the mountain, however you have to do that. And, you know, wherever there's hard work, there can be a great sense of accomplishment, you know, on the other side. And then when you do get to the other side, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I've gotten, you know, this far. I mean, from the time that you were in that bed, you know, a month later, they're waking you up. You've got your family around you. You've got some doctors, you got some other people coming in telling you, you know, what life might be like, you know, and where you are today, you know, just going on this insane endurance race that you took on, you know, I mean, that's hard. I don't think, like, even on my best day, because I haven't put, I mean, I'm shifting a little bit, just saying, you know, for you to do that, going up and over the mountain was hard work. And for just anybody to go out there and try that would be almost impossible unless you trained and you worked at it. And that's the point. And that you got to identify what that is. Then you got to step into the fear. And then you got to really take it on no matter what. And the biggest thing is, and you didn't have a choice. And in some ways I didn't have a choice. A lot of people don't have a choice, but you can't quit, right? There's no, you know,
that's it.
Right? The other side of that of failure is just living a life that is incomplete. And that's not where you want to go. And that's not where, like you were saying earlier in the pod, where kind of life changed from you in terms of really expanding your mind because you went to these other places in the world. And it's kind of the same thing when you do step into the fear, I think.
That's it. You know, you can build off of that progress that you make, and you can build off those failures because it is going to show you how you reacted, where you need to better yourself, where you might need to implement some self-discipline or just get stronger at whatever it is. So I guess wherever you can kind of really take in that feedback that the world or whatever is giving you, that your emotions are giving you, you can grow from that.
So what does life look like for you today? You know, now this has been 4 or 5 years since your accident. I know you're racing and things like that, but you know, what does life day to day look for you like?
Pretty normal, really, except for, you know, I'm not walking around. I'm still completely pretty independent, you know. So that's pretty simple. You know, I still struggle with, you know, I'm not really getting out into these wild places that I've been to. You know, I'm pretty much sticking to a sidewalk, sticking to the road, but that's all right. But day to day, you know, everything's, I'm completely independent. My wife does help me out when I need it, which I'm really, really grateful for. She's a really patient woman.
Now, is this somebody were you married to her before this happened, or was this?
This was after I met her, probably almost a year after my accident.
Yeah.
And we've been married a year. So yeah, it's been pretty awesome. I'm pretty damn lucky.
Yeah. That's incredible. Congratulations. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, tell me where people can find you.
Yeah. So they can find me at joshuapellan.com. That's P-E-L-L-A-N-D. And I've got social links there, Instagram, LinkedIn. And if anyone wants to reach out and chat to me about anything, ask me any questions, I'm always open to that and grateful to chat with people.
Beautiful. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on, number one. Number two is I continue to get really inspired because, you know, look, doing podcasts is nothing compared to what you've been through, but it's a grind, right? And I've done over 200 of these now. And sometimes I'm like, I got to do another one. And then I talk to you, people like, I mean, I the whole theme of the show is people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And every week I have somebody that fits that theme. And it just reminds me when I talk to them, my place in life and how grateful I am and how appreciative of everybody's story, of what they've had to go through. And it keeps me grounded. And I appreciate, you know, your story and what you've done, helped do for me in terms of inspiring me to keep going. And when I think, you know, things are going off track, I look at my like, is it as bad as this guy's or this girl's, you know?
And yeah, perspective. Yeah.
Perspective. And that goes a long way. So I appreciate you for coming on and sharing your story.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And thanks for your audience for listening.
All right.
Hope they enjoyed it.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. There he is, Josh Pellan. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.